the photos you showed us, rather, were extremely emotional. What were you feeling in those moments, or do you recall a certain moment where you kind of just, it was almost unbearable for you to take those photos?
In the moment when I'm working, I'm not that I'm heartless, but it doesn't affect me. Other than it affects me in that I'm saddened by the disaster, the loss of life, the misery, and I live so well here in Canada, but I don't choke. Now, today I had a good day. I showed all those pictures, and there are a few of those that I sometimes, when I'm showing them, I have to pause for a moment just to clear my throat. And sometimes I just have to think about it, and I'll feel it. I mean, I got sappy when the Khan family was being attacked, the Gold Star family, when they were being attacked by Trump. I'm watching a sad movie, and you know, my wife says, you know, she can see I'm feeling odd about it. And I think part of that is that my age. I think as you get older, you get more sappy. As a young man, I don't remember being that concerned. You know, it was yesterday, and I'm on to something else. But no, in the moment, I don't think I stopped to say I feel really bad about this. At the end of the day, when I'm sending the pictures back, I might feel a little beglemped, but it's not that. I don't think I could work if I was going to stop every 5 minutes. Now, again, as a photographer, you've got this thing in your hand, and you've got to be pointing, you've got to be thinking about exposure, focus, composition. And that comes first. So obviously I'm not going to stop and really ponder how sad the moment is.
When I started covering conflict and disasters in 2006, so this is 11, 12 years ago, I kept on thinking to myself, well, whatever I'm feeling at this moment, seeing the aftermath of an Israeli airstrike in Lebanon, for example, how could anything I feel possibly compare to the person in front of me? And I think about that, and I used to use that as a way to block myself from feeling the right to feel anything. And I would think, no matter what, at the end of the day, I get to go home, and I get to just live my life again. And I chose to be here, and I chose to do this. Whereas the people in front of me will forever be affected by this. And that was like a really good shield for me for a while. But then after a while, year after year after year, that principle of not being affected and trying to defer to someone else's emotions, not feeling that right, not being able to feel that right to feel, kind of just wears away. And it gets harder and harder the older you get, because it becomes very cumulative, the effects of trauma and the things that you see. And the weird thing is, it actually affects me, I find, in it's when I'm back in the West or back home in Jerusalem, New York right now. It's only when you're back in your normality that you realize just how abnormal your experiences were. And I think, to me, coming back is the weirdest experience, and that's what's actually really hard. In fact, when you're editing your video or your footage, like in the same space that what you associate with home has actually been, that's the hardest thing. When you're there in the field, everything is new and everything is different, but it's that jump between those two where I don't know how to deal with, and it's still been quite a struggle.
I think that's really interesting that when you're in the field, you're sort of in reaction mode, but when you're back home, you're front and center with the radical difference between two worlds, and it's hard to really place yourself in between those spaces. So I can well imagine that.
I'd like to say one thing. Several years ago, the 50th anniversary of D-Day, I went to Normandy with a Canadian soldier, Charlie Martin, Queen's Own Rifles, short, stocky guy, and I read his book before going, and I thought, I had not even met him yet, and I was reading this book, and I was thinking, if they ever did a movie with this guy, they'd have to get Bruce Willis, you know, Die Hard 44, because he was just marvelous. And then when we got to meet him, and we were traveling through, following his steps the first day that he landed on the D-Day, we went to a cemetery. It happened again. He says, he started to cry. And he apologized. I said, no, don't. You know, I stood back with a long lens taking pictures. And he apologized afterwards. And he said, you know, it's been 50 years. And it's only when I think of it and I'm seeing his best friend when they landed. You know, he was 10 feet on the beach and the mine hit him and he was gone. And he says, it's when you relive it in your head.
Thank you, Peter. I mean, yeah, there you go. It's hard. It's hard work what you do, but you guys do an incredible job. And I'm really thankful that you got to show some of your work to all of us. Did you want to step in? Ed?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that... It's... it really got... that gets you thinking. It is important when you come back to really think about and take stock of like what it is that you've just seen. And I think it's never what you think it is. It's always going to be the most random triggers that affect you in the weirdest way possible. It's like a smell. It's a random, you know, like working in the Middle East for a long time, like ISIS and all their execution videos have ruined the color orange to me, that every time I see this color, I react to it. Like, I was in Parkdale a year ago, and there was some air show that was happening, and I had no idea you would react in that way to hearing the sound of fighter jets. And I just found myself shaking and really upset. And then I kept on telling myself, like, I'm in Toronto. I'm not in Gaza. I'm not in Lebanon. I'm not in Somalia. How am I feeling this right now? And I was with my friend, and I ran into a closet. And actually, I left Toronto because of this air show, because I just don't want to hear the sound of these fighter jets. And it's the weirdest thing, because that happens, and when you were there, you never really thought about any of that, except the ethics of what you were trying to represent in front of you. But then you come back, and it's really weird. So if you're going out, really think about long-term, and people have talked about this in the other discussion, like how are you being affected? And because if you can't do your job, if you are too affected, then in the next thing that you cover, you're gonna bring that baggage with you, and that's not fair to the subjects who have nothing to do with your past.
Well, I'll just add one little thing. But I think it's what Ed and also what Peter's talking about is the belatedness of trauma. And people who do work on trauma talk about the sort of after effects, that the traumatic experience isn't really an experience that's had in the moment. It's something that is stored behind, and it returns later. And it's sometimes like a trigger, like the color orange or something, quite out of the blue and quite not expected. Will flash back to whatever the event might be, and so that's really one of the kind of conditions of the traumatic response, is that it's a belated response that returns later.